It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, Jordan.
Coming up, bottom of the hour, head coach Lisa Stockton announcing her retirement from Tulane. That was part of the Tulane women's program for 13 years as their play-by-play. So we're going to have Coach on at the bottom of the hour. She just got done visiting with local media. She is calling it a career to go enjoy the retirement life and enjoy it. The numbers are insane. When you take a look at her time over at Tulane, 591 career Division I wins. That's 14th among Division I coaches. 654 overall, perched 27th overall. And you got five WNBA players, eight players, and a whole team that's been inducted into the Tulane Sports Hall of Fame. Going to get to all those numbers here as well. Why now? And more importantly, what she plans on doing. And having some fun and relaxing a little bit as she calls it a career after 30 years. Coming up next segment, Sean Fox will join us as we'll see how he's doing in his life. And that's really how that segment goes. I always have a plan and idea to talk about some sports. We normally do. We'll touch on Saints. We'll touch on Pels. I just want to make sure that he's okay. You never know when it comes to him. I do know what's okay. Last night, Pelicans picking up win number 42 over in Brooklyn.
Now Zion backing down DFS, lefty floater good. All night long,
yeah.
Big Z.
Yeah, exactly. Just feed it to him and let him work. He's either going to get a basket, go to the foul line, or he's going to find the open teammate.
And then, of course, you had the big play.
He's got Claxton in his hip pocket like a pair of keys. And, I mean, there's nothing. Claxton doesn't have enough weight. Najee with the pick.
Alley-oop Z.
Fly, big boy.
And that's what everybody in this building has been waiting for all night long.
Z soaring. He has been trying to catch a lob. That's the third opportunity, and he cashed it.
And it started defensively with the Najee Marshall steal.
Zion on that lob dunk.
What were you thinking when Najee got that steal?
Throw it up. Because it was crazy because me and him, they like just talked about it. He said, hey, man, you go to the paint, you need to start dunking. So when he got the steal, I said, oh, he's throwing it. So he threw a good pass and went and got it.
42 wins for the Pels. That matches the win total all of last season. One of the things that head coach Willie Green said was, hey, it's kind of cool to have back-to-back winning seasons, by the way, for the first time. Since 07-08 and 08-09, there were the Hornets back then.
We're trying to build, starting with our foundation. And, you know, it starts with the people that we bring into our building that contributes to having a healthy program. And so high character, people that bring a ton of energy, that are hard workers, top to bottom. And that's the program that we're trying to build, is a sustainable winning culture. And it feels like we're trending in a good way right now.
Ryan Fitzgerald, general manager of Enola Gold, joins us here. Sean Fox, next segment here, will be chatting with you as you make me feel like we're both eating healthy here. I got tuna.
Yeah.
What'd you get?
Just a little burrito
bowl. Little burrito bowl. Yeah. It's good protein there. I mean,
yeah.
Guy literally looks like he could still go play rugby. wear some, baggier shirts and stuff next time. In all honesty, though, we were talking about the Pels. It's no different than what you guys are trying to do here with Enola Gold in this aspect of it. Building a winning program, foundation pieces, becoming where playoffs are something that you don't even think about anymore. It's more about seeding and are you a championship contending. But I know sometimes teams and fans kind of want you to skip those steps, you know, go get this player, go do that.
Yeah.
You got to get there. You've been around sports all your life. Before you even got to rugby, you did football, you did all that other stuff too. You really do have to go through those steps, and you have to get those steps right, right? And there are a lot of different things that go into getting those steps. The coach,
yeah,
the players, getting them to buy in, locker room, culture. There's a lot of different things that get going to where all of a sudden the game and winning becomes second nature because of the stuff that you build in. But It's a process to get going, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, I've said it before. It's not a fantasy football team. It's not just like plug in and play where it's a video game. There's everything from character issues, identity, you know, you're building your identity, character issues, injuries. You know, guys have the heart, guys don't. Some guys, you know, and I know these are all coaches' terms in some ways, grit and all that stuff, but those things matter. Those things matter. They actually, personalities matter. You can't just plug in and play everybody. That's the whole process of the other, you know, the scouting. It doesn't take a genius sometimes to figure out, like you watch LeBron out of high school and go, wow, that kid's pretty good.
Yeah, that's easy.
It's trying to find the guys.
That's not the norm.
No, it's trying to find guys in the fifth round and the sixth round in the NFL draft, and guys, or even NBA guys that, you know, going through the D League or, you know, the summer league and stuff, that, you know, like a Chris Middleton from Milwaukee, where they, you know, pick him and they grind with him for years and stuff like that and build, and now he's an all-star. Those are, you know, things you have to have, like, everybody on board with it. The ownership all the way down is willing to be patient, and the scouts are willing to be patient, and the coaches are willing to be patient, the players are developing, the medical staff, everything. It's not as easy as everybody thinks to just, like, you know, find this one guy. Hey, move up. Even when people in the draft say, hey, just move down. We have to have a trade partner to move down. You can't just move down, you know, so.
And it's interesting. A lot of times we talk about live and learn and players, and we look at it from that aspect, right? Coaches get better. Players get better with experience. I don't think it's any different, and we really don't talk about it probably as much as executives.
Right.
Like, you're probably a better GM today than you were when you first started, or when you first started being scouts and stuff like that.
100%.
Of experience. Because it always intrigues me. I've always wanted to ask you about this. We'll maybe talk a little bit more about it as we get closer to the draft. When you speak to players, or you know, everyone knows you're there in the stands, or you're watching at a game, at a high school game, or things of that nature, right? I mean, people know that. So what do you normally do when you go on an interview? You're on your best behavior, you have your stuff ready, prepared, stuff like that, right?
Yep.
So it's almost like trying to find out when things are uncomfortable. I always say that. To me, I want to know how you act when nothing goes right.
Right.
When the bleep hits the fan, do you panic? Do you try to find solutions and things of that nature? I try to talk to my kid about that all the time. Like, what's the problem? Nothing's going right. Figure it out. Like, be calm in those moments. Like, what would you say would be keys for you when you look at players and prospects now that were maybe different when you first started this job?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, first starting it and figuring it out, I mean, you see, like you said, originally when you first started, whether it be football or rugby, I guess you're kind of looking at, like you said, you obviously, first things first, you got to play.
Yeah.
But then there's that interview process that is like, you know, just like you said, good times, everybody's easy. I always say that all the time. You know, it's easy to be best friends with someone where, you know, never been through anything. All you guys were drinking buddies and this, that, the other. It's the same thing with any team sports. You know, you find out where your character of a person and as a teammate. When you guys go through some stuff, you go through some teams, you know, players being traded or coaches, you know, a coaching change, and letting them moving on from, you know, another coach or whatever it is, injury, season ending. How do you deal with that? Battling back, adversity, all that stuff. You're coming back with, you find out, you know, if this guy's going to make it for a long time in the career, if he's just going to be a, you know, quick one. I don't know if you ever read quick stories. Bill Polian's book, but he said at the interview, you know, Bill Polian was Indianapolis Colts general manager, and he had the tough selection in 98, whether it was Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf,
right.
And he says in the book, in that 15-minute interview, when they had Ryan Leaf in, they interviewed him, they had all his coaches in there, all the scouts in there, and, you know, he did say that if you pick me number one overall, I'm going to miss rookie minicamp because I got a bachelor party in Vegas.
He really said that?
Yeah, in the book.
Guess what? That is him. Yep. That was him.
And then 2 minutes later, Peyton Manning walked in and erased everything off the dry erase board. He told them what he ran at Tennessee, drew up all these plays, and said on the way out, you know, my dad told me not to say this, Mr. Polian, but, you know, if you pick me number one, we're going to win the whole thing. If you don't, I'm going to kick your ass on the way to winning the Super Bowl.
There's a big difference there.
And it's kind of a no-brainer right there. Yeah. That's just, I mean, and you can use that in any aspect of life.
Yeah.
Whether it be rugby, whether it be football, whether it be basketball, or just your normal job. I mean, that's the kind of people you want on your team. And you don't see that necessarily on film.
Right.
You have to get down there. You have to go to the Senior Bowl. You have to go to the Combine to get that draft. You know, you go to the NFL Combine, most of it is figuring out that stuff, is meeting and talking with them. You know, you're just checking the boxes and verifying the 40 times and all that stuff. But the big part of it is the interview process.
I want to bring something up to you from a perspective. So we were talking about the Pels matching their win total from a season ago and obviously what Zion's been able to do. Because you mentioned LeBron, right? I mean, like, when you see a player like that, they call him generational talents and things of that nature, right? I mean, you saw what he did in high school. You saw that year at Duke. Like, you're sitting there going, wow. And then you've seen what happened the last 4 years. I mean, things happen, right? Maturity, things that, like, I don't know if you know that, if it's happening. And let's be honest, the excitement, oh, he's going to get it around. I'm not worried about it 2 months in, 3 months in. And then you make excuses or you try to do it, but eventually it comes to a head. At the beginning of the season, he wasn't in the best of shape. You could see it.
Yeah.
Your eyeballs told you that. And you can see it on the court. He was very short with his sentences. And you know this when you talk about interview process. Every answer was 2-3 words. I remember talking to you about it. I'm like, dude, he's so short.
Yeah.
And this was him Saturday being asked about that.
Right.
And how he feels now. Because at the time he said, I need to take a back seat to being the leader. CJ, you guys got it. That's not me. I'm not ready yet. Here's his response.
I wasn't where I needed to be. I talked to CJ and I talked to B.I. about it at the beginning of the season. And, you know, CJ definitely stepped up. I don't think he gets enough credit for that, especially early in the season. CJ really stepped up for this team. B.I. is B.I. Like, I don't even got to talk about how great B.I. is. But CJ really stepped up for this team early in the season and even halfway, just being a leader and just having a huge impact on the game. While I was stacking my days and getting to where I needed to be. And like I said, over time, my coaches and my teammates, they saw it and they trusted me. And they're continuously trusting me. So I got to give CJ's respect on that and B.I.
I talked about it back then in October. I didn't pile on. I'm like, this isn't me. Hey, you see, this guy's not right. Look, I think it takes a lot of maturity to admit I need help.
It does.
It takes a lot of maturity to be like, not yet. At the same time, you hear him describe it. It takes a family or it takes a village kind of process there, doesn't it?
Yeah, to lean on one another.
Coaches have, but players also be like, and not look at them as weak. Be like, hey, man, we got you back until you're ready. Until you go get in shape, but you have to go do it. And you hear other players talk about it now. The fact that he's put in that work, that he's dropped 25 pounds since December. He's doing all those different aspects of it. But that's something, too. Then maybe you're not thinking about 4 or 5 years ago when you drafted him, right? I mean, that's the other element to you being a GM where you're like, but you're hoping, I guess, you build the foundation around it that if you have a case like that, you can take care of it in-house, right?
Absolutely. And just because you've been a captain, even though I don't know where Zion has before or anybody has, but just because you've been a captain at the high school level or the collegiate level, you get to the professional level at any sport, it's a different grind. It's a different situation. You start having a family now. You're getting paid. There's endorsements. There's things that, doing 82 games, 41 on the road, back-to-backs. There's a balance trying to create that time with your family, time with your in-house, how much film you watch and how much everything. So there's a little bit of a transition period where not everybody can just step on and be a leader and be captain just because you were the number one overall pick, just because you are a freak athlete. It takes a lot for a player like that to pass it off to CJ and B.I. and say, hey, man, I just need you guys to hold the fort down for me for a little bit until I get up to speed there.
Right. No, I mean, it is something to kind of see from that nature. All right, man, enjoy your lunch real quick. Sean Fox is coming up next. We can laugh at him or have fun with him or cry with him.
There you go.
comes All back the next. Above. All the above. We're live at the Gold Mine on Airline. That is General Manager Ryan Fitzgerald of Unola Gold. We spoke with J.P. We spoke with Corey Brown, your head coach here, earlier in the show at 12:30, as we do every single Wednesday. When we come back, Mr. Fox, next on ESPN New Orleans.
He's back.
He's like the thing that wouldn't shut up.
He's got his own catchphrase.
He's the best invention since they started Frosted Puff Tarts.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
100-998-1003. That is the caller and guest line as we get a hold of Sean Fox here shortly. We're live at the Gold Mine on Airline. Apparently now he's not taking my call. All right, I'll text him. He knows he's supposed to be on.
Great music coming back.
You like that? You like that music?
Outstanding.
All right, I hear what it is.
Well done.
I asked your players and coach here as well, what stood out to you in the game?
Oh, tremendous.
Against New England.
Yeah, tremendous game. It's one of those games for us where, we were 2-0 going in. Obviously, we're going into New England playing the defending champ in Boston on St. Paddy's Day weekend. They just lost the week before in their banner raiser game. To go in there, we got up on them a little bit at first, but they're going to punch back. It's two heavyweights going at it. What I was most impressed with is the fight for our guys all the way down to 82nd minute. So in rugby, just for the people that don't know it, they're a lot like hockey standings and soccer and stuff.
Yep.
There's a point system. So it's win, losses, and draw. But then there's also a point system. You get a win, it's 4 points. If you score 4 tries or more, you get that extra point. So you can get a total of 5 per game. And New England had scored three tries. And in the last play, they're trying to go over and get that fourth try to get that. Not only do we prevent them from doing it, we go 90 meters the other way to make it, you know, to score and make it 27-21. Because if you lose within 6 points in a game, you do get that one losing bonus point. So that's massive. You know, there's been times it's so cutthroat in this league. There's been, you know, two seasons where we've missed the playoffs by one bonus point. Sometimes we've had a better record.
A point.
Yeah, and we had a better record. That's, you know, back in 2021, uh-huh. You know, we had a 10-5-1 draw record versus New York had a 10-6. We beat them both times, and they had one more bonus point, and they went.
Okay.
So stuff like that. So the fight and to recognize that and not quit all the way down to the 82nd minute, that was massive.
I love that. Yeah. Sean Fox now joins us up there from Fun Row, Louisiana, Sports Talk 97.7. Sean, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
Gus, good afternoon to you and all your faithful listeners. Happy Thursday. Oh, it's Wednesday. Happy Wednesday.
It is Wednesday.
On the weekend.
Well, I hear you. Well, along those lines, General Manager Ryan Fitzgerald of the NOLA Goalies here. We're at the Gold Miner Airline. And he asked me, all right, so who's Sean Fox? And I'm like, well, you know what's funny? Let's do it this way. Well, let's do it this way.
I didn't say it like that.
No, he didn't. He totally was like, I don't know this guy. Who is this guy? And I'm like, well, he's not a bum, but I will do this. How about you describe yourself? Like, if you were going to give me, you know, I'm inducting you into the Airline Motel Hall of Fame or something, and I need a description with your photo. What is your paragraph? How are we describing Sean Fox?
Well, the airline motel, I would be equivalent of a hotel that you pay by the hour, not the day.
Okay.
Sports talk show host. Yeah. I think Gus and I have very similar shows. We've been coming on each other's shows for, Gus has been coming on my show for almost 20 years now. So basically, we're just a sports hangover in North Louisiana, might be the best way to describe it.
Kind of like Miller Light, right? There's a Bud Light, something like that. Yeah,
sure. Well, yeah, man, I'm sponsored by Bud Light, so let's go with that one. But yeah,
well, there you go. Yeah, I like to think at this point in my life, being almost 50, I'm more like Michelob Ultra over here to my right. One of your sponsors, sir. Feel free, by the way, Ryan, to send some Michelob Ultra my way.
There's some right there.
I'll even go Ultra Gold, Gus. It's better for you.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what it is. That's the one I actually get. Yeah. I do get the Michelob Ultra Gold because it is organic. It makes me feel better too, Sean. How many? Let's stay on this train here. How many Michelob Ultra Golds or Bud Light, since you said they sponsor you, would you need to make you feel comfortable after you found out the Chase Young news?
Gus, at first, when the news broke, I've never really cared about the money. Like, first of all, it's not mine. Secondly, the salary cap, whatever. It didn't bother me. I was like, okay, I can see the upside to this because, like, I've seen some people on Twitter, I'm not going to say any names, people I respect, but, like, they're basically saying this is Davenport and Peyton 2.0. I see where this is coming from. The difference is this dude was actually the Rookie of the Year. And had double-digit sacks in his rookie year before injuries set in. So I see where the comparison is. I don't know if I 100% agree with it. But then the news came out yesterday, and you're like, dear God, there are two things that this organization, it's a given. They like Ohio State Buckeyes and guys who have a lot of potential, love that P word, but also have been red flagged for injury history. This is just what we do. It's Buckeyes and injuries history. Gus, you know, I went from like, okay, I really dig this move. I like it, to what the hell are we doing? Why do we continue to do this? But then the news broke today of, well, maybe it's not 13 million guaranteed, and maybe it's a little bit less than half that, and you're basically, we need his butt to hit the field. So I went from about an 8 on excitement to it to a 2. So now I'm somewhere between a 5, how I feel about it today. Does that make any sense? It's changed.
No, it makes perfect sense. Well, look, I will say the last 2 days, 3 days is exactly what it's like to be a Saints fan. Oh, got a guy number 2 overall. Of course he has a neck issue. Well, it's not that much money. I mean, that's basically what it is when you look at it.
You just described it in a lot less words. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I could also add the exclamation mark. The Falcons will still win the division. So anyway, so that's one aspect of it. Look, I will say this. And I asked Ralph this earlier in the show, so I'm going to ask you. does this take the edge rusher off the table for you at 14? Are you still with, man, the best player available on the board? If it's an edge rusher, you're taking him? Or now that you got one and like 15 other players at that position, is it tackle? Because Mel Kiper came out with his latest mock draft yesterday, and there he is. The offensive lineman from Penn State, no sacks given up in his career. Pro Football Focus came up with one yesterday. Same player from Penn State going to your New Orleans Saints.
Gus, at first, I just want to say something real quick. You cut out when you said no sacks in his career, and I thought you said something else, but they were about to have a completely different conversation. But,
it would have been a completely different conversation.
It sounded like you said that.
I was
did
like,
it really?
Wow, I wasn't expecting that. No sacks. Yeah. In his career. I was going to think, oh, I didn't know the guy got married already. Gus, here's the thing. You and I have discussed this on both of our shows. Yes, tackle, guard, whatever, offensive line play is a huge need, but this is a team that has more than one need. Absolutely, they need a pass rusher still and an outside edge. Absolutely, they need another wide receiver. Absolutely, if Brock Bowers is there, you'd be stupid not to contemplate making that move. This team isn't a position or a player away from winning this division or going to the playoffs. Like, they need a lot of help. They needed an injection of youth and talented youth at a lot of different places. And Gus, here's the thing. It's starting to be like the offensive line where you – or I'll go back for a while. Like, for a long time, the albatross, the abyss of this organization used to be defensive back, especially the cornerback position. Like, we just could not find one. Saints, the cornerbacks were like Browns and Bears, the quarterback. You just couldn't find them. Well, we figured out that problem a few years ago, and we've started to get some really good defensive backs, cornerbacks, particularly lately. They've just plugged and they've plugged and they've plugged since Cam Jordan, and they just cannot seem to find somebody at that other defensive end position. And that's why I think they took the opportunity to get Chase Young. But you need more. Like, Foskey hasn't worked out. Peyton Turner might as well be on the back of a milk carton. I mean, he looks Marcus Davenport looked like he was an every game player. I mean, I actually forgot, I'll be a dead serious about this, I forgot Peyton Turner was even on this roster. So, yeah, if Dallas Turner or Jared Verse are at 14 and all those tackles are too, I wouldn't bat an eye if they went with Dallas Turner or Jared Verse. Because it's a need. You absolutely need. Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers somehow falls. Keon Coleman, they went that way at 14. I'd be fine with that too. It's a need.
All right. Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't know where to go when it comes to the draft, you know, in that aspect of it, other than I still feel tackle, you know, receiver could maybe draft. Did you look at how many quarterbacks are going there, including J.J. McCarthy to the Broncos? I mean, five quarterbacks before it gets to the Saints, and if that happens, then a good player should be there at 14.
Gus, I wouldn't mind at this point if we had to stick with your theme, some New Orleans rugby goal players go out and try out for defensive
end.
It couldn't hurt.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. I knew right off the bat. I like this guy.
Yeah, you like him, huh?
I knew right off the bat.
There you go, Sean. You got a new fan. How about that?
Okay, well, that makes one. So thank you.
Oh, I mean, I like you. That's two.
It just takes a spark to start a fire. I try to tell my wife that. She doesn't listen. But thank you.
Okay. Easy enough. Hey, about your pals, man. Are people flocking up over there or what?
They have flocked all the way up, Gus.
Really?
I mean, we can't possibly flock up anymore the way this team has been playing. I mean, Gus, think about this. They're not just winning. They're killing everybody. It's not even competitive. Like, it's almost like the Globetrotters versus the Generals right now. I don't even recognize. I'm not used to this. Not only winning, but, like, expecting to blow somebody out. You know, there was this time where how many times have we discussed, oh, God, they got up big, and you're like, great. This is where the infinitely or ultimately they're going to give up the big lead. Now you're like, they're going to win. And now it's just how much they're going to win by. I will say, not to be Debbie Downer, but it really is amazing. And I'm sure, Gus, being the talented sports talk show host you are to the New Orleans area for years, you've gone over this with your audience. Mine, not so much. I brought this up yesterday, that you look at the amount of games they play this year. What are we at, 60 plus?
There's 14 left.
Okay, there's 14 games left, so rough math, 68 games. Boy, that's pretty good for somebody who failed algebra.
Yeah, you did that a lot faster than I did, which is why I gave you the games remaining and didn't do the math.
Addition and subtraction, Gus, I'm like Rain Man. You start putting letters and shapes next to numbers, and I am out. But I can get you with the simple math.
Okay.
But anyway, of the 68 games they've played, you know how many one-possession games they played in all year? Including last night? What I call two- or three-point games. You want to know how many they played in all year? You ready?
Ryan's giving me four.
They played in seven. He was close.
Okay, he was close.
They played in seven one-possession games out of 68 this year, which means they're either blowing somebody out or they are getting blown. Because we're good. What happened the other night against the Cavaliers, for whatever reason, we're good for that at home. And it always seems to be at home. Like once a month, the Pels are going to get their tails kicked in the blender. Can't understand it. Yeah, it's awesome. Like, during this winning streak, the closest game has been 7 or 8 points. It's not even close. My only issue is when you get to the postseason, it is a different game. Every game is close, and we just haven't played a whole lot of them because you're either killing people, and we've been on the plus side of this, or you've been getting killed. That's just something to watch coming to the postseason. But how can you not be excited what you've seen right now?
Yeah, no doubt. 28 games by double digits or more. There's one other team that's close to that. You know who that is? Above the Pels? Boston. That's the list. That's the list, by the way.
Boston or Oklahoma City. Yeah.
Yeah, in Boston. That's it. It gives you the idea of what they've been able to do. They've been taking care of their business. 28 wins by double figures. NBA teams with more than that. The Boston Celtics. That's it. So your Pels are doing pretty well. Well, look, man, if you ever come down here and stuff, come check out a NOLA Gold game. We'll take care of you.
Come on, Sean.
I would love to. Well, hey, let's gold up. Let's hear it for the gold rush, right?
Oh, yeah, babe. Okay. April 6th, we need you against Chicago. We need you, Sean.
Sounds good, man. All right, take care, buddy. We'll see you soon.
Bye, guys. Gold up.
Yep. Head coach Lisa Stockton of the Tulane Green Wave. She announced her retirement yesterday. Had a meet and greet with the media just a little bit ago. She joins us next on ESPN New Orleans.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Welcome back to ESPN New Orleans as we're at the Gold Mine on Airline, home of the NOLA Gold. General Manager Ryan Fitzgerald's been hanging out with us here as well. It's my absolute honor and pleasure to welcome in Miss Lisa Stockton, head coach for the Tulane Green Wave for 30 seasons. And, Coach, you announced your retirement. First off, great to talk to you again. It's been a minute since I spent 13 years with you guys. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing fine. I don't know if I'll ever get to retire. At least I don't know if I feel like I can. Coach, obviously, it is an exciting time and day when you reach that level. And, like, you know what? I'm going to take some time here and enjoy it. But you look back at the reason behind it, what came to be? I said, well, why did you decide, you know what, maybe now's the right time?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, it's retiring from coaching. You know, we're not retiring from life. I think there's a lot of things I want to do. You know, I think that, you know, the pace of coaching is, you know what it's like. It's crazy. It's intense. And I said to someone today, you know, I started this job in August, and I was 23 years old after I graduated grad school, and I hadn't stopped since. And, you know, it's 30 years, kind of a milestone. It just seemed right, you know. It just seemed that, you know, it's time for me to kind of step back a minute, catch my breath, and then figure out some other things that I want to do.
No doubt, Coach. And obviously, when you get to a point like this, and I'm sure you sat down with everybody in media relations and to sit down and try to look back, it's going to take some time because there's so many different things. Look, we can do the stats. We can do the 21 postseason appearances. We can do the five WNBA players that went there. We can look at all the different conference tournaments and stuff. So I'll just ask you like this. What does stand out in your coaching career? Was it the relationships? Was it the wins? Was it the losses? Was it a specific game? What stands out to you today?
Well, you know, I think the wins when you're in it are the most important thing, obviously, right? When you're in it. I think when you really step back and try to evaluate what you've contributed and what you've done, it's the relationships. You know, it's the people, it's the kids, what they're doing. I mean, I look back on the first kids I recruited at Tulane, and they got their degrees, and what they're doing now, and what these kids I coached this year, what they're going to do. I, I think the relationships are absolutely the most important thing, and it's definitely the thing I value the most.
One of the cool things is when I would come in and hang out at y'all's office, do some interviews, and just see y'all is the wall of photos of players that you have that's in the Tulane Sports Hall of Fame side that it comes from your program and from there as well. It's quite an accomplishment when you look back at it. And I think what's cool is every time I'd bring a player up to you or we'd be on a road trip, on a bus or on a plane or at the airport waiting for a flight, you always were very specific and you could remember something about that player, whether it's a practice thing they did, something they did on the road trip or something they did in a game. Is that something that's very unique to coaching?
You know, I think it's so personal when you live it. You know, I cannot remember what I had for lunch yesterday, right? But I can remember something Barbara Ferris said in 1998. And, you know, it's just something because it is so personal when you live it. And, you know, I think there's things that are funny that happen that you remember, like all of those things, you know? And, you know, we get together. We had a chance this year with Alumni Weekend. Since it was my 30th, a bunch of people came and we really told stories about road trips and all that. It's funny how their view of the road trip was different than mine, but, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, we just told stories, and I think for them, the things they remember isn't making a shot. You know, the things they remember are their teammates and things they did, and, you know, we went to Alaska or we did something like that. So I think those memories are the same for them as those special things.
591 career Division One victories for Lisa Stockton joining us here in the Sports Hangover. When you look back at those wins, do some stick out? Is it, you know, when you get to go cut down an end, win a conference title, and go to the dance? Is it when we played at Duke? That was the one I got to go to and play in a historic place like that. I don't know. What stands out to you? There's got to be a handful of games. I know it's just so hard because there's so many, right?
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, you can think of stuff that's really big. You know, we almost beat Connecticut, right? 3 points,
yeah.
We almost beat Connecticut and on their 103-game win streak. You know, the ones cutting down the nets. You know, obviously, I remember coming back from Katrina and being the first game back in the city.
Yeah.
You know, that was December 18th, right? I remember the date, and I remember, you know, people being there that had never seen us play. There's so many things. Championships, run on the floor. You know, just we had a player that made the winning shot in the pink game, and her mother had died of breast cancer, and it was like the biggest moment of her life. Like, just things like that come to mind. Like, so many things. I remember cutting down the nets for the first time in 97 at DePaul, and, you know, probably one of the most special was when we won in 99 in Devlin. That's when we had the conference tournament. We hosted it. So, you know, having our people, having the Greenbackers holding the ladder, you know, things like that, like, it was really special. But there's so many of those that I, yeah, the nice thing is I have highlight films, so I can watch the highlight films and remember certain things that I probably just couldn't remember today talking to you.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I tell Graf all the time, at least for me, what one of the ones that when we beat South Florida in Tampa,
it really was. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. They won the championship, it won, but I'm not going to lie to you, and I felt good when I came there.
It felt good.
For sure. Ryan Fitzgerald, general manager of the Goal, has a question for you.
Coach, congratulations. Yeah, I got a couple, three rapid-fire questions
for you.
Three rapid-fire.
Okay.
Yeah. Toughest place that you ever coach against, like toughest opponent that you always coach against?
Well, I'm going to give you two. I think UConn, when they were so good and on that streak and going playing at UConn, was really tough.
Yep.
LSU, when they were in their Final Four run, you know, with Simone Augustus and all them playing in Baton Rouge, I think both of those were really tough.
Toughest player that you ever coached against?
Toughest player. You know, it's been so many. I've got to say Stewart, Breonna Stewart. He just was so good on both ends of floor. He was just incredible.
Toughest player that you ever coached?
Toughest player. I'm going to make a lot of people mad with this one, right? You
it's
know,
part of the game.
I'm not going to say the toughest. I'm going to say the most competitive player I've ever coached was Grace Daly. And there's a reason she still has that record. Most competitive kid I've ever coached. She competed in everything. And so I definitely give her that honor.
Those are the good ones.
Yeah, no doubt. Coach, one of the things I used to love chatting with you, too, is just I think one of the things that a lot of people love about your career and what you've been able to do in talking about women's basketball is not only being passionate about it, but really seeing the growth, too. And I it was interesting when we first went into the conference, and there's UConn, and everyone's like, oh, boy. And you're like, no, it's not a bad thing. And listening to Geno sit there and talk about, hey, it makes other teams better, pick up their programs and do those things. Coach, since that first year, now they've moved on and went Tulane into different conferences, but now look at college basketball on the women's side, Coach. I saw yesterday 6 times as many tickets for the tournament have been sold on the women's side than the men. That's incredible. And that is probably really what Gino was saying, huh, Coach?
It is. I mean, I think it's been there all along. I mean, honestly, I just think it took people to buy in. And the media's part of that. Just buy in. You know, show it. Show Caitlin Clark. You know, I mean, show LSU and Angel Reese. Show them and, like, you know, talk about them. Put them on the front. And also, you know, the change in revenue sharing and all those things that have really given women's basketball a lot more power.
Yeah.
It's going to make such a difference. You know, women's basketball is going to make money, and they're going to show they make money. And, you know, I mentioned this today. I think the growth of college basketball is going to really change what the WNBA does. I think the WNBA will really expand because of what's going on in college women's basketball.
Yeah, and look, just in the time that I was there for those 13 years, two more chartered flights, two more attention being given, and just how the game changed in the time that I was there to where it is now. You mentioned Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese. You could probably name a good amount of players now, and people probably have an idea where they are, but just the game has changed, Coach. In your 30 years, you've seen it. I mean, obviously we see the three-point shot changing basketball overall, but South Carolina's monstrous. I mean, you look at some of these teams we've played. The players are better. They're stronger. There's coaching now throughout the entire season. And when you're getting them into your program, they're a little more advanced than perhaps 15, 10, 15, 20 years ago, huh?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is I think women's basketball has always had their stars. Like when I was back in the day, you had Shira Miller was always a star. He was amazing, right? You just have so many stars along the way. So it's the stars, but I think what it is, what you're saying, is the depth of talent. You got, like, again, in our league this year, everybody was good. There wasn't anybody that was bad, you know? And you better show up every night or you're going to lose, and that's across the board. So the depth is so good, and, you know, I definitely think that makes it competitive, just like the men. You know, I mean, the men, there's just so many great players. You see a team, like, with upsets in the March Madness is because there's just so much depth. So I definitely think you're going to you really see a difference there. And you know, teams, you just don't have a lot of teams out there that don't have some great players.
Well, Coach, a 15-minute segment is not nearly enough to talk hoops and go over all the accomplishments you did. And I know you'd be the first one to sit here. A lot of people that helped you do that, a lot of players here as well. So we're going to bother you. And maybe you can help us be an analyst throughout the women's tournament this year and such and moving forward. Because as you said, you're retiring from coaching and not from life. And I know you want to help the women's game and stuff. So I am going to bother you on that. But let's wrap up on the tearjerker moment or the tearjerker moment here. What are you going to miss the most?
Oh, it's going to be the staff and the players, no doubt. You know, I love practice. I will miss going into practice and kind of having that strategy you want to put in. That's definitely something. But, you know, to go in and work with a group of people like my staff and then to stand up and just, you know, coach those players, that will definitely be, you know, that's definitely going to be a little void.
Well, you have some time now, and I'm going to probably bother you for some of it, as I said, but congratulations, Coach. Thank you for hopping on today. I know you've been doing a lot of that as well throughout the day. Oh, for sure.
And let me ask you, what is every New Orleans person that want to celebrate, what are they going to do? I'm going to go have some crawfish.
There you go.
There you go. You absolutely deserve it. Yeah, no,
all right.
For sure. Thank you so much, Coach. Appreciate the time. Miss Lisa Stockton. 30 years, man.
Incredible.
That's crazy. When you think of all the
accomplishments. Yep. Walking in that same building every single day for 30 years and competing, that's awesome.
It's a change.
Relationships that you build.
Yeah, I know.
You
know? And look, and again.
You know the stadium people. You know everybody that works. You know people in the parking attendants. It takes the whole university to win it.
And it's true, though. Like, when you think of 30 years, right? I bring this up all the time when it comes to the Pels, where we're now gone through a generation. And what I mean by that is, right, a kid could have been born in 2002, 2003, and, you know, they graduated high school.
Yep.
with the Pelicans or the Hornets here, with an NBA team here.
Right.
And I always bring up, you know, Little Mark, who's not Little Mark anymore. He's in his 20s. He right. actually has a house that I pass on my dog walk every day. But I used to school him as a little 8-9-year-old playing in the driveway, you know.
Backing him down.
Yeah, no, don't bring that in here. He loved hoops. But, you know, and it was right when it first started. And I was like, man, I'm covering the team, you know, and I'd bring him a keychain or whatever. But he was excited. And I never understood, because I never grew up with that. You know, I heard stories of the Jazz from my dad's days and stuff like that. But it was awesome to kind of see that. But, like, Carver's grown up with an NBA team. Like, it's no big deal to him when I take him to the arena.
Right.
You know, he's like, yeah, there's always a team. I'm like, no, bro, you don't understand.
It wasn't always
an NBA player here. Yeah. Like, some dude named Zion and some other, you know, pretty big players are in your own city. So it's kind of cool, and that's why I'm glad we got to do this year with the gold here as well.
Absolutely.
You guys are Major League Rugby, and Major League teams in a Major League city can help. Final segment, we come back on the Sports Hangover.
106 miles to Chicago. Got a full tank of gas. Half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark. And we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
There it is. That is the lawnmower. How short can we cut the grass here?
Oh, they cut it off today, almost twice a week there. It's good old Thomas killing it.
It's Thomas?
Yep.
What's up, Thomas? How's it going? All right, you got Dallas this week, huh?
Dallas. At Dallas, yep. Tough team, physical team, big scrums. Biggest thing, obviously, you know, obviously, like I said earlier, not a video game. Of course, you'd love to go 16-0, but if you could defend your house, go 7-1, 8-0 at home, you know, and go on the road and split, you know, if you could get to the bye week at 3-1,
we'll
be sitting there either in first or tied for first right there. That's a good spot to be. Get healthy over the bye week and April 6th back here again in Chicago.
This 2-week period is kind of I would say measuring stick, but it's interesting because obviously you're taking on a team that won it.
Yeah.
So it's a barometer game. You kind of want to see where you are right there.
Sure.
And now you got to come back and bounce back, still on the road. And, you know, Coach Corey Brown was saying, you guys scrimmaged them, and they were pretty good.
Yeah.
That scrimmage.
Yeah, we had.
And they scored a lot of points. So this is a good team.
Yeah.
Are they better than New England?
No, I don't. Oh, in my opinion, I believe New England is still right there. They're defending champs. You still got a, you know, a respect for them, but I do have all the respect for Dallas.
Yeah.
They've rode the gauntlet here. You know, their first year, you know, in 2021, you know, they went 0-16. You know, and then 22, they went 0-16. 23 last year, they had their first win. They had, you know, one or two wins, I believe it was one draw and about 14 losses. So, but then here they are. They started off 2-1. They did well in the preseason. They've recruited well. They've drafted well. You know, they have an identity. They're a big, strong, physical pack. Augustine Chivin, their head coach, is a former, you know, a big, huge lock from Italy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he kind of builds it around that pack. Some big boys up front. You know, I think we got I think with Corey and the way that he executes and finds your weakness in your game plan and goes after and attacks it and then really gives clarity down to our coaching staff and to every single individual player, I think that I like our chances. I do. I think the boys are ready and prepared and coming off a, like I said, it's a weird one up in, it's professional sports. You don't take a lot of, when you take a loss, you don't take a lot of, like, you know, try to find, you know, that. What is the consolation prize for it, you know, if you will. But one, rugby does have that in the bonus point. And two, going up and getting that up there on St. Patrick's Day and everything, and we'll be fought away at the end. It's one of those games that you can kind of build your identity and character off your team.
That's what I asked him, too. It's like, I mean, things like that, you...
That's who we are now.
Look, to an extent, and this is one of the things I love about having you on. You're a sports guy, too, as well, and you follow all the teams here. A lot is being referenced where Zion and his team is after the beating in front of everyone in Las Vegas at the hands of the Lakers, right? That play-in game. And then you had another big loss against the Mavs. Larry Nance, team meeting, you know, things of that nature. There was growth. There was ultimatums. There was, hey, it's time to, you know, tighten the belt, whatever analogy you want to use, lace up the strings on the shoes, you know, whatever, grow up, be man, whatever.
Yep.
But that comes from losses.
It does.
Doesn't it? It's so weird when you think about it. I mean, and you can look at any team or things of that nature, you can kind of get an idea. I mean, I would even say, like, when you first started thinking, maybe the Saints are that good. And I'm not talking about the 13-0 start with them. But along the lines, very few times can you say it was after a win. For me, in that season that you kind of thought, oh boy, maybe the Saints can win the Super Bowl is when they beat the Patriots. And they went no mas. Mm-hmm. You know, with a couple minutes left in the fourth quarter, they pulled Tom Brady. And you're like, they did it to the Patriots. Oh, you might be, you know, so. But most of the growth moments do come in defeats.
They do. And in life. You know, I mean, it's like I said earlier, it's very, I mean, there's always that thing if you're winning multiple in a row, it's awesome. But I think everybody, each every player in the team, every coach, maybe not every fan, but still, you ought to know, like, the one thing that you haven't checked that box yet is how are you going to respond if you get beat, or how are you going to respond if you lose, and you don't know that. It's like that old movie back in the day, Fight Club, when Brad Pitt says, you know, how much can you really know about yourself if you haven't been in a fight, you know? So it's kind of that same thing. If you haven't been tested here.
Why does that sound like absolutely what a Marine would say? You said that with such glee. Yeah. You had such a smile on your face. And I'm like, I've never been in a fight, right. Ryan, so I try to talk my way out of it.
Well, there you go. Of course, that'd be the perfect scenario, but, you know, I mean, a game like, you know, and if you want to win the championship, it goes through this person. It goes through this team. It goes through, and you got to do it. So there's no other way around it. Winning at home and everything is all, you know, good and great and everything like that. But those long flights and, you know, getting a win on the road after a loss like that, like I said, it can shift the whole culture of the organization.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. Coach said the first 2 days so far have gone really well. The attitude in the locker room, things of that nature. And I guess that's what you kind of want to see. You do have a pretty vet team. And a lot of guys that have been in the situation, so let's go put it out there on the
pitch. Absolutely. No, we're fired up for it. The boys are prepared. Like I said, this whole season, top to bottom, you know, it's been nothing but, you know, like clarity. Everybody knows their roles. Everybody knows exactly what they're bringing to the table. We have the depth to rotate. We have the depth to, you know, if you have a couple injuries or here or there, we can plug and play and compete.
All right, got about 30 seconds here. The most important question that I have for you all day. Who you got winning?
I'm
the
sorry?
National championship. The bracket. Come on, you have to have Philly.
Oh, who do I got? Oh, I'm sorry. Got. Sorry,
who's your final four?
You know, I'll probably go on my final four. I don't know off the top. But I am filling out one. Our whole team is. You know who's? You know who I like a lot? Obviously, like? From Milwaukee boys and everything. I'm going to go Marquette.
You're going to go Marquette? All right.
Well, they're in the final four. I'll put them in the final four.
That's fine. Yeah. We'll go with
Marquette.
Them. Okay. Yeah. That's fine. Easy enough. We'll see what happens. Thank you so much for having us, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck
Always
to you.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate it,
brother. Talk again next week. Matt Moskonen, after further reviews up next, we'll be at Katie's tomorrow. You've been listening to The Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.